When I look in the mirror at who's staring back at me, the world's not getting clearer, but it's easier to see. I'm turning into someone that I've never known. Past is coming undone, but I like where I'm going. I know I'm changing, changing. Watch me go.
I'm done running. Samantha Fish with the opening track from her new album, Paper Doll. Been looking forward to this one, and the wait is nearly over as Paper Doll hits the streets tomorrow. That's tomorrow, but right now on Jump Children is my very great pleasure to welcome Samantha Fish to the hot seat. Samantha, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. All the better for talking with you. I'll get to the album in a tick, but first I just have to ask. It's the Rolling Stones 2024 tour, the final show, close to home in Missouri, and on the bill is Samantha Fish. How did you feel when you got that call?
Pretty ecstatic because it had been kind of teased for a couple years. So back in 2019, Quint Davis from the Jazz Fest here in New Orleans had said that, you know, that they were going to play down there for that year, the 50th year anniversary. And he wanted me to play on the same stage as them. And I was just blown away and so excited. And then, you know, and then it didn't end up panning out. They had to cancel. And so I just felt like, oh, it's too good to be true. You know, it was just too big, you know. And so then years later, it happens in New Orleans. We get to play on the same stage. But the promoter for that, Quint Davis, was like, we got to get you that direct support slot. And he stayed on talking to their tour publicist and said, if you guys add an extra date to the tour, you should call Samantha to open the show. And they did. And the rest is, I mean, it's just one of those things that, like, as he was saying it at Jazz Fest, I'm like, you know, I don't know. I don't know if lightning's going to strike twice. I can't believe it struck once, you know, so for it to happen twice in a year was pretty, pretty spectacular.
Does the Rolling Stones audience differ much from yours?
I mean, there's a lot more of them. a lot more of them. I mean, it's different, but it's also, it's music fans. You know, I saw a lot of people that I know, and, you know, like I saw a lot of my Kansas City folks there. And, you know, I think the Stones are just this like timeless classic band that, you know, the biggest rock and roll band on the planet. And they speak to all age groups. They speak to all demographics. You know, those songs are just, they transcend everything. So, you know, I felt like it was a really amazing opportunity to perform in front of like a really diverse crowd of people. And, you know, just the honor to be asked on that bill is, you know, it's like, it's a pretty high honor.
Thank you. I was curious. To the business at hand, Paper Doll, out tomorrow. Congratulations. I absolutely love it. I've had it for a few days now, and it's been on pretty heavy rotation at Cassidel Stephen.
Thank you.
Produced by Bobby Harlow. You worked with him on Chills and Fever in 2017, which, by the way, is a personal favourite of mine.
Oh, good.
How did you reconnect with Bobby? Was he a deliberate choice as producer, or was it a happy accident?
I mean, a little bit of both, right? Like, a lot of why we do things when we do things are because it's the right time, right person, right energy in the room. And so Bobby and I reconnected last year around March. We played a show in Detroit at the St. Andrews Hall, which is where he's out of. And I hadn't seen him in years, you know, and he came to the show and he really loved the band. Like, he was really, truly blown away by my live band. And he said, this is what you need to capture on a record. And, you know, we just started talking about co-writing. He came to New Orleans. We worked on some songs, you know, but as that became something, it was pretty obvious, like, he had a vision. And knowing that, working with him prior, when Bobby gets like a vision for something, it's like, well, you know what? If you're in agreement with the vision, he's your guy, because there's nobody more passionate about the music than Bobby, you know, other than like me, you know. But he's not a passive producer, you know. He's very involved. He's very opinionated. He's gonna cheer when things are great, and he's gonna, you know, shake his head and say, that's awful if it's not, you know. He's very deliberate. And so when he started expressing an interest in the overall vision of the album, it was like, well, he's the guy to do it then, you know. And it was great to reconnect, honestly.
I've heard you say that you grew up a lot making Chills and Fever. Did you experience anything similar working with Bobby this time around?
Well, I think, you know, the first time I worked with Bobby, he's got this exuberance and energy that, like, when I was there, you know, I felt like when I was doing Chills and Fever, I felt a need to really maintain that control all the way through. I had a chokehold on everything, and I was very rigid. We butt heads a lot. And I, you know, looking back on the things that I really was so adamant and rigid about, some of it was like ended up being the coolest things, some of the best work on the record, and things that like helped me grow exponentially as a musician and as a player, and opened up my world to something else. And, you know, so you go into it with those blinders off. And then, of course, we get into this new record and we're still butting heads, because that's just who we are as people.
Yeah.
We're both really passionate about the record. But I definitely feel like there was a level of trust on both sides, like him with me and me with him, to where it was like, all right, if you're going to die on this hill, I'll let you. And we'll just go down this path together. And, you know, but it's kind of fun, you know, looking back in the moment, everything feels really, really big and important. And it's like, at the end of the day, we both just have the best intentions for the music. And I couldn't have picked somebody better to work with, you know, because he lives and dies by this stuff like I do.
Wow, chills and fever. To give to me when you hold my hand, tell me that you're my loving man, kiss me and squeeze me tight, tell me baby I wanna love all night. I get low, chills and fever. that you love me so. Never, ever, ever let me go. I get lured. Chills and fever, oh. Chills and fever, oh. Chills and fever, chills and fever's what you give to me. I get lured. Chills and fever, oh. Chills.
You recorded Paper Doll on the road with your touring band. Was that a first?
Yeah. And really, you know, that was like Bobby just being so enthusiastic about the band and, you know, hearing that there was a chemistry and a vibe. And also part of it was just that when we looked at the schedule to make a record, there was absolutely no time to do it. Like we were, you know, on the road with Slash all summer. Then we did the, you know, we did the Stones thing and it was just looking, and then we had all our tour dates in between. I mean, looking at the calendar, there wasn't like 2 weeks off until December. And I wanted to have a record done before that. So it was like, okay, we have to reevaluate how we're going to approach this. And so we really just started chipping away at the record 2 days at a time. Like we had 2 days off. So between Austin and Oklahoma City, that was our first session. We said, all right, let's find a studio in Austin and go start making songs. And it really, you know, we thought maybe this was going to just be a little EP or something. And then as those songs got finished, it was like, no, we got to make a whole record because this is too good. You know, all of us all working together. So we recorded it in a couple different studios, the Orb in Austin and then Savannah Studios in LA.
I imagine playing together every night would get you pretty tight. Was there a noticeable difference in the studio?
Yeah, no, you're dealing with like just a chemistry thing, you know, and I think there's an energy thing too. Everybody's kind of warmed up. So you're going in, you're not totally cold going in on these songs, but it's not like they knew the songs before we walked in. I wanted to keep everything a little under lock and key. There's, you know, the control piece for you, but, but only because I wanted us to create together, not separately in our rooms. And, you know, I wanted us to like be in the room and have this moment together, you know, and I wanted it to feel exciting and live. And, you know, I think that to get that kind of energy on a record, there has to be a little mystery about it. but yeah, I think, and they're just, everybody in the band is so good that I wasn't worried.
Just answered a couple of questions that I had later on. So you weren't playing these songs live before you recorded them?
No, definitely not.
Oh, that's incredible. There's a story that's legend in this country that AC/DC, the Bon Scott AC/DC, as we would say, went into the studio straight from a show while the adrenaline was still pumping from performance. And it's a big part of the sound of those early AC/DC albums. I was going to ask you if there was any of that with you guys on this record, but I think you've answered that because you said you did it on days off.
Yeah.
And I was also going to ask you if if the songs were in the set before you recorded them, but you've answered that as well.
No. I like to keep it surprised. I don't want anybody to hear the songs until they come out. You know, that way they have a chance to go. And, you know, hearing something brand new on the stage is great, but there's a lot of other things that can influence how you hear them. You know, like say there's something wrong with a keyboard that night, or there's a, you know, like there's just a lot of different things that can influence your first time hearing something. I think it's really, it's for me, it's important to wait just because I like the element of surprise and, you know, give people something to look forward to, right?
Well, Paper Doll is an album of songs that, well, for mine, lyrically very strong, very confident, quite powerful in places. And I can imagine at times I'm hearing some hill country blues in there, in Sweet Southern Sounds, Fortune Teller in particular. And in Fortune Teller, I also hear a little Black Sabbath. I can imagine Ozzy singing those lyrics at times.
Yeah.
What would you say were your influences when writing for this album?
Well, I mean, you just nailed it. I definitely, you know, when I was writing those songs, like if you just sat me down with an acoustic guitar to play these songs, you'd probably hear a lot of like the blues foundation and inspiration behind them, because like the guitars to me are totally blues driven, and coming from like my favorite influence for, you know, blues sounds and style, like the North Mississippi sound, you know, the hill country music. And you know, so for me, that's kind of like where the record is rooted. And I don't know. I mean, it goes all over the map. I feel like I don't like to tell people what they're listening for, you know, but to me, that's really obvious that, you know, it's in there. But, you know, rock and roll has always played such a big part of who I am and my music. And I feel like, you know, it's sort of a blend of all these things, you know. The genre game's a little tough these days because there's so many influences and everything's just kind of mixed up, but we're really desperate to catalog everything that comes out and say exactly what it is. But I think good music is just good music. If you like rock and roll and you like, you know, that style of blues music, if you like soul, if you like, you know, I even have a song that kind of touches on the Americana world, you know, it kind of, I dabble in a few different things, you know, so there's a lot of influences present throughout the record, but I think what comes out is just a snapshot of who's in the room when we're making it.
I want to ask you about a couple of the tunes on the album. We've had a handful of singles in the lead up to the release of Paper Doll. Sweet Southern Sounds was the first of these. Fantastic song, yeah. But a bit of an outlier. Doesn't have the hard edge of many of the others. What influenced the selection of this song as our first glimpse into Paper Doll?
Well, you'd have to ask the record label. They're the ones who call these shots. No, I mean, I think that Southern Sounds kind of hit. I feel like it's maybe a good invitation. You know, I think that's why these things get chosen the way they do. And I think that the guitar solo is rising at the end because it goes somewhere that the rest of the song doesn't naturally. Like, I mean, the rest of the song is like, it starts off in this kind of mellow hill country world. It's got kind of an anthematic chorus. You know, the tones are really great. The backing vocalists are really dramatic. You know, the singing is great. But then it kind of goes into this other place. And it's like, you know, I think that's when the foot hits the gas. And I think for the people that make these decisions, and I supported that the decision, just so you know, I think it's a good invitation to what's to come next, you know? And though you're right, it's not the hardest edge song on the record, I think that like overall there was something about it that felt inviting.
Time.
The first four tracks are pretty intense. Then halfway through, we get to Take a Breather with Off in the Blue. Could you talk a little about that song, please?
Yeah. That song's really about, feeling disconnected from people that you love, and you're kind of off in the world, but they're still connected to you in this way. And it's a melancholy, you know, it's a song about heartbreak and feeling estrangement. But the song itself, like the musical part of it, I wanted to come and approach it a little softer. You know, like you said, the record does kind of have a rock edge, but that song it's delicate. And I wanted to lead with the vulnerability in it. And, you know, it was really fun to record because, you know, I got to lay some lap steel guitars in the background and create some like really spooky ambiance. And it just is a vibe all its own. It's like, you know, it definitely isn't like anything else on the record, which is great and weird. And, you know, it's going to be somebody's favorite song somewhere, you know.
Oh, it's pretty close to mine at the moment.
Really? Okay, it's you. I love it.
There you go. I've ticked that box for you already. One more I'd like to mention. Rusty Razor, whole bunch of fun, and you feature a guest, Mick Collins, on that one. Now, on my first listen, I thought that your vocal didn't sound a lot like you. Did you do something, or is that just my ears playing tricks on me?
I was definitely singing things in a, well, all right, let me preface it to say, one of those sessions, I was coming off of like a cold, you know, so my voice did sound a little different. I think I had a bit of a higher timbre on some of it, but like, you know, I'm learning more, like, especially in the studio to, you know, put some color and character on certain songs. And that song, the subject matter is kind of dark, but it's like, I wanted it to be a little bratty in a way, you know, so I just approached it like, you know, like I thought, how would a Blondie approach this song, you know, like just a little laissez-faire, like, you know what I mean? And I don't know, I was just channeling a different energy, I guess.
new songs in the set changes the show. How do you think about what you want the show to be and what you leave out to include the new tunes?
Well, we've been playing some of these older songs for a while now, so I'm sure our diehard fans will be happy to get something fresh in there. For me, it's like I have a lot of songs, in my catalog. And I think the idea is that I want to play everything from the new record, but we're going to troubleshoot it as we go on tour. This happens with every record. You want to play every song. And then eventually you realize maybe there's a limitation with one song. It just doesn't quite land a certain way on the stage as it did in the studio. And so you end up backburnering that one in lieu of something else to create a better show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think creating a show that has fan favorites, but also my favorites and the new songs and maybe some cool covers that we've never done before that sort of tell the story of the record and, just kind of create a whole world for people to come and enjoy when they come to our show. That's my mission. So to be determined, right? That's exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be ever evolving. I know that, it's never going to stop changing.
So how much does your set vary from night to night?
It just depends. For me, I definitely I have a festival set. It depends on how much time we're allotted to play. You're playing 60 minutes at a festival and you know the environment's going to be rowdy, you're not going to pull out an acoustic guitar and try to whisper at people. It's really based on the environment, and I change it, just kind of considering what are people coming to experience. And, I think that we've got enough material to cover all the variables. And, that's kind of where I start.
Thank you. Last one. We've been a little spoiled down here with Samantha Fish tours in the last couple of years. When are you coming back?
It breaks my heart because I know I'm not coming there in 2025, but I think we're looking at 2026. I just have to say it's been a real joy to get to tour and play multiple cities and, travel around Australia and meet people, in Perth and down in Melbourne and all the way up the Gold Coast. It's been really exciting to get to experience, a different place.
Well, Samantha Fish, thank you so much for speaking with us on Jump Children.
Oh, you froze for a second. What did you say?
I said, Samantha Fish, thank you so much.
Thank you. I just wanted to say it twice. Sorry. No.
Paper Doll is out tomorrow. If you get your skates on, you can catch Samantha live at the Civic Theatre in New Orleans on Saturday. My visa's valid and I'm very, very tempted. But in the meantime, we'll take another track. Samantha Fish on Jump Children. Stay right here.
Get it right.
What you say, I beg your pardon.